Welcome to the Imagine Israel podcast, brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington. Imagine Israel is the initiative of the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington, connecting Washingtonians to Israel and Israelis through the lens of social change. With every Imagine Israel podcast, we get to meet innovative Israeli influencers and changemakers, people addressing social and economic challenges in Israel. We'll hear from people whose lives and whose work intersect as they address issues in Israeli society. And I'm your host, Robbie Grindgrass, and I'm coming to you from Makom, the Israel Education Lab of the Jewish Agency for Israel. So in this episode, we're going to dig into the question of food insecurity in Israel. I doubt anyone would say that many people are starving in Israel, but there is a growing swathe of people in Israel who are not able to feed themselves or their families as any of us would wish. And this is also working families, people who are on the edge. Maybe they're eating only one meal a day rather than three, and kids in particular. And all this is going on at the same time as over-catering, food waste, food surplus is rampant across Israel. Now, of course, it's not a uniquely Israeli issue. It happens across the world, and, for example, Greater Washington has its very own DC Central Kitchen to gather waste food and distribute it to those who need it. But just think about starting something like that up in Israel when your Hebrew isn't great and you've only got one car and a family fridge. So that's the story I went off to Ra'anana to hear from Joseph Gittler and his organization, Leket. So Joseph Gittler, very, very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Thank you for coming out to my home to make this super easy for me.
With pleasure. We do anything for Greater Washington. So tell me, Joseph, it sounds like whilst we're meeting you as an Israeli change maker, you seem to have excellent English, albeit with an odd accent.
Yes, I do love when people say to me, you have a great accent for an Israeli. But I've been in Israel 18 years. I made Aliyah in September 2000. And the Washingtonians listening to this will, of course, recognize my New York accent. Many of them, by the way, because they're actually from New York originally.
I don't think we're allowed. I think I'm going to have to edit that out.
No, no. It's okay. I don't want to make enemies, but I know when I go to sport events down there, sometimes there can be more Yankees fans than local fans at the game. So they know what I'm talking about.
Okay. So I'll leave that in and we'll wait for people to write in under the line afterwards. So you arrived about 19 years ago and you moved straight into working at this strange organization, Leket, or?
No, I made... I went to law school in New York. My wife, Leila, is from Toronto. We made Ali with one kid. And when we got here, I left the law behind and I went to work in a high-tech company that we, our family, is fortunate to own here. And I worked there for about 3 years and then got really concerned during the height of the Intifada with tourism down and high-tech investment down and the first ever poverty report put out by our Social Security. It just got me down. It was a really hard time in early 2003. And I made a decision that I wanted to see, could it be in the land of so many wonderful charities, could there be something missing? And what I...
So hang on a minute. What, yeah. You're telling me that up until then there had never been a report about poverty in Israel?
Not like that. I mean, you know, there was a lot of action in poverty, but as a national study from the government itself, nothing like that had ever put out.
What was it saying?
It was saying that...
What shocked you?
What shocked me was not the usual suspects, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but certain communities, Arab communities, ultra-Orthodox communities that are known for having high poverty rates, but for me it was the working poor. Families where husband, wife, often both were working, and they were still struggling to make ends meet. And that was such a harsh thing for me to hear. And certainly those listening in Washington, this is no different in the U.S. People working full-time and still needing help from the government or needing help from charities is such a damning thing to our societies. And for me, it was too much to bear. And I announced to my cousin who I was working with, I'm going to take off a few months and I need to discover and look and see what's missing. And what I was shocked to this day, nearly 15 years, it's almost 15 years to the day, what I'm still shocked at is there was no DC Central Kitchen, which listeners will understand. There was no Maryland Food Bank. There were a lot of smaller charities feeding the poor, but no one's saying, let's put the blinders on and just figure out how we deal with excess food, not taking care of the poor directly, but saying, well, what are all the farmers doing? What's the army doing? What are caterers doing? What are manufacturers doing? What are corporate cafeterias doing? Everyone was just out there on their own. World overproduction of food is estimated by the UN Food Program at about 40%. So you're talking about crops that are rotting in the fields. You're talking about things that don't get sold in supermarkets. You're talking about a wedding where there's too much food that's been produced. They do that because they're scared, right? The problem is you don't see my face, but in Washington, those who see me will see my face when I come.
He's looking stressed, yeah.
You know, it's everyone's scared of running out of food at an event. So they'd rather produce 20 to 30% more for that one event. And let's take it one step further. As a world, we have to produce excess food. We can't have a situation where one year there's some parasite in the wheat crop and now we really don't have enough food to feed the world. Mm-hmm. So we're always going to produce 5, 10, 15% more than we need. The issue is in the West especially, we're producing 40, 50%. And that's where people like Leket or the DC Central Kitchen, which is a super famous organization in the U.S., etc., come into play. Our job is to figure out how to make sure that that excess food, which is safe, healthy, and nutritious, doesn't end up in landfills, which is an environmental disaster, but gets to feed those who need it. And this genre of work is expanding day in, day out.
So you went out on your fact-finding mission. You'd read the report. You saw that there was a problem with excess food. Then what happened?
So I started to call caterers.
Well, you just decided, well, I'm going to pick up the phone.
I went to Toronto for a week. I just picked Second Harvest. That was my organization that I chose. And the nice thing about the world I'm in is a very sharing world. I went to Toronto, spent a week there, saw a little bit about how this world works, and came back with a head of steam. And so first I visited agencies that I did before I went. And they all told me the same story. We're not getting donations of food. We're busy taking care of homeless people, battered women, Holocaust survivors. Our job is to help them get out of their situation. Food is part of what we do. An after school club for kids, food is an important component. It's
right,
a hook.
I see what you mean.
But they don't exist simply to feed. So I said to ourselves, okay, so my job is to figure out what they need, then go to the food companies and see what we can get from them. And so the first thing that they needed, you know, I saw was cooked food. If we could bring them cooked meals, high quality, ready to go, we've taken a cooking burden off of them. We've taken a purchasing burden off of them. I started to call caterers. The response was overwhelmingly good.
So this is just you on your own.
So it was in my office, calling 100 caterers. My Hebrew was weak. I wrote down the words I needed. The words, many of them were the same. Catering is catering, you know. So there's a lot of that sort of thing. You know, I just said, I know you have extra food. I know you're throwing it away. Would you give it to me? The response, well, wasn't what kind of deduction can I get? What about if there's the food poisoning? It was, we know there's need in Israel. When can you be here?
Wow.
And so that, you know, a lot of preconceived notions that I had about responses I would get, the responses were awesome.
your preconceived notions, did they come from having spoken to the Toronto group and the Washington group? As in other countries, is it more difficult to get moving?
So, yes. And I grew up in New York. I have a law degree, litigious societies. I just, you know, it wasn't even, are you really a registered agency? Can we see your refrigerated? Nothing. What kind of training do you give your volunteers? It was, we've been waiting for this.
Wow.
See, it was just, you know, this is the type of attitude that sometimes serves Israel well and sometimes serves Israel badly. In this case, if my first 10 responses had been more American type of responses, I swear we would not be talking today. This never would have happened.
It would have knocked you down, knocked you back.
Yeah, I would have said, okay, this is irrelevant here. Maybe I'll go a different direction. But the direction, which was immediate, me out the door buying containers, taking my Subaru station wagon out at night at 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock, was within the day, picking up food, putting in my refrigerator at home. Then my wife saying, we need the refrigerator for our house. Buying used refrigerators, putting them in my garage. Meaning things took off, things that may be elsewhere.
You made the first phone call?
I made the calls. The caterers were into it.
On that first day?
And I said to them, okay, I need to know your schedule.
Yeah, when should we start?
Where are you? Are you in-house? Are you cooking in one place and then catering in another?
Uh-huh.
How can I connect with you? I don't want to just come out and then get two pieces of schnitzel. I want it to be semi-substantial.
Okay. And they gave you the answers?
They gave me the answers. And, you know, some answered their phone at 11 at night. Some answered their phone at 1 in the morning.
Okay.
And I was just going out.
So hang on, so we got this crazy American guy just get into your car that day?
That day, the next day, depending where they were working.
So you stop at a few places, you just turn up and you say, hi, I'm the guy to pick up your spare food.
I brought my containers, where can I work? Uh-huh. Are there any waiters who can help me? No, yes. Am I in the way? No, yes. can I take this? No, we're saving that for the family. We haven't, you know, very much getting my feet wet, seeing, and the waiters love it. Because at the end of the day, it's the waiters throwing away the food.
Mm-hmm.
No one really likes to throw away
their
hard work. I said, I'll pick it up. I'll distribute it free of charge. Okay? And that was it. They just, I made it easy for them.
Right. All of a sudden, it's easy for me to be generous with what I'm throwing away anyway. Just help me.
Right. And that's how we really work almost primarily till today.
Wow. So were there not concerns from government, whether it's healthy, whether it's fresh, whether it's...
The government was concerned once we started doing a lot of this and our name started getting out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent a lot of time with us, never giving me, you know, a letter of approbation.
Okay.
But just saying, we are comfortable with the way you work. Keep on doing it like this and we'll stay out of your hair.
Uh-huh.
It's a very actually nice and adult way of doing things.
Yeah.
So, in my book. And that would never happen in most countries.
Uh-huh.
The government would be in your gotchkas.
Is that what you're hearing from other organizations?
I've visited dozens over the years.
Uh-huh.
And they're always amazed, especially in cooked food. Uh-huh, forget everything else that we do. Cooked food especially, they're jealous. A lot of organizations around the world just don't get access to this kind of food. Wow. Everyone's nervous, even though there are laws. Let's take the states. Good Samaritan laws, which protect donors from legal liability.
Oh boy.
As long as they're not reckless. And despite that, because of the litigious culture, you know, your lawyer advises you, who
don't
needs this?
Uh-huh.
Who needs this? Stay away. A lot of agencies themselves tell well-meaning food donors, no, I can't take this. That's too risky.
Wow.
So it's a bit of a catch-22. In certain countries, I thought that's what I was going to run into here, but I didn't.
Strange name, Leket, where does that come from?
So, interestingly, it's a strange name to non-Hebrew speakers. Hebrew speakers know Leket as one of the biblical terms that explain to farmers how they had to behave towards the poor. Technically means gleaning. So if people remember the book of Ruth, where she's collecting excess crops in the field and meets her husband. You had to leave a corner of your field. You had to leave things that fell off the wagon for the poor. It had to be an accessible place to the poor. So we've modernized it.
So according to Jewish tradition, there are ways that farmers ought to behave so that the poor can eat. the excess.
Craig, I think it was farmers because farmers were business people in those days.
Right.
So it made sense that they were talking to them. So like it's just a modern day adaptation.
You started off this guy driving around in your Subaru. What's the size of Leket now?
Ooh, it's big. So Leket today has about 110 employees.
Wow.
We have a budget, cash budget this year, of about $15 million. On that budget of $15 million, we should bring in, I'm doing math in my head now, about $75 million worth of food. That means cooked about 3 million cooked meals, about 45 to 50 million pounds. Sorry, you'll have to translate that. I'm talking to Americans now.
Oh, you're talking weight, not
weight.
Money. Okay, right.
Okay, fruits and vegetables. Yeah, not British pounds. That would, about 45 to 50 million pounds of fruits and vegetables. Should do about 80 different crops this year. Thousands of food donors. About 15 refrigerated trucks. About another 15 other pickup trucks, delivery vehicles. When you think about us, you have to think about us as a FedEx for food rescue. We are a logistics organization finding food, getting it free of charge. We spend our money on staff because that's who moves the food. Drivers, forklift operators, food raisers, volunteer coordinators. About 50,000 volunteers this year picking in the fields.
Wow.
So people who are listening are welcome to the fields to come volunteer in our warehouse, sorting fruits and vegetables for redistribution. It's a mega operation run by a very committed staff, by a very committed board. We have way more to do. We estimate we're doing less than 5% of cooked meals or fruits and vegetables. That's a study we do. We have a food waste study we do every year. It's a major study. And so we want to grow. I'd like to see us doubling in size within the next couple of years. It's a challenge. I mean, the biggest challenge is financial.
Mm-hmm.
Not because, I mean, we have almost no competition. It's the greatest business in the world. I wish it was a business sometimes. IPO. But
why isn't the government doing it? I'd always seen when I made Aliyah that Israel was supposed to be the home of the Jewish people. And in a home, people get fed.
I think we're no different than any other country.
No, I appreciate that. But I know that part of my reason for coming to live in Israel was that I wanted Israel to be more special, more impressive than other countries. And do you sometimes think that it's not that you're not doing amazing work, but isn't it a shame that it needs a charity to do that?
So look, I'll say as follows. Certainly Israel's followed the rest of the world with privatizing more social services. We've seen that over the years and leaning on the private industry to take care of it. You know, sometimes I think about it and I get frustrated. And truth be told, we are getting more and more money from the government every year. So I don't think anyone thinks the government should be doing what Leket is doing per se.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you really mean is, you know, shouldn't the government be taking care of feeding the poor? In whatever way it is. So whether that be taxpayer dollars outsourcing it, that's one way of doing things. And there is money flowing in, but it's still very, very small. Governments have to make choices. And often I say to myself, well, I'd love the money because I'm as greedy as the next guy. There's tougher issues, especially to raise money for, where the government needs to maybe put its resources. And let's add to that, the state of Israel has financial issues that no one else has. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, we were supposed to get some significant government funding, about $2 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And our budget was much smaller then. You know, that's one day. And the next day, the fighting started in Gaza. And a budget surplus of 7 billion shekels was gone in a week. We have issues that no one else has. So we have to sometimes say, I'll say it in Hebrew, rachmanus, pity. We sometimes have to take a little bit of pity on the government. I'm not saying everything's peachy, you know, clean here, and that there shouldn't be more money flowing to welfare, but it's a complicated place. I have a solution, always, for that question. We can raise our taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're ready, Robbie, you'd be the first guy to sign up. You're British. I'm saying, you know, you should have seen his reaction, everyone. It was actually better than I expected. You know, we can go Scandinavia style,
mm-hmm.
and then we can, you know, the difference will be Lekets will be able to take care of everyone, but a lot more people will need service from Lekets because they won't be able to pay their bills. It's an issue. And frankly, outside of 60-70% taxes, which is what you see in some of those places, no one has figured it out. The U.S. Department of Agriculture spends $70 or $80 billion a year on feeding programs for the poor, and yet everything I've spoken about today exists everywhere in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Okay, more of the money and food that is powering the Maryland Food Bank and D.C. Central Kitchen does come from your taxpayer dollars. The flip side is we are a much hungrier organization. We get no food from the government. We get very limited. This year, we'll get maybe 5% of our budget from the government. So it's made us hungry to find our own food sources. So everything has its pros and cons. I'd love for more money from the government. But on the other hand, there's no perfect solution. The best solution is people earning a good wage. That's the best. And so I pride ourselves in Leket paying a decent wage to our employees. I wish we could pay them more. They all deserve it. But everyone who comes to work for a charity knows what they're getting into, unfortunately.
Yeah, tell me about it. And so tell me, what's one of your best memories in the last 15 years of Leket? When did something happen that you said to yourself, you know, that's what I'm in this for? Well, that's something I'm going to tell my grandchildren.
Right, look, so I definitely remember one of the earliest pickups I ever did was with a nice English gentleman from Ranana, Nigel. And we were maybe 6 weeks in, and he had come and volunteered, and he had one of those old Volvo station wagons. And we went to a big pickup in Tel Aviv, and we're filling up the car. And now it's time to we had to put the food in the passenger seat. And he's Nigel, he's British. He said, "Joseph, it's either you or the bread."
Wow.
So it was the bread. And he left me behind. So I remember that because I said to myself, we've really arrived. It's not just the quality. Look at one event, hundreds of meals from one little event, one small 500 person wedding. And we're feeding 200, 300 people. So to me, that was just gold. Okay. And of course, you know, the flip side is the people we're helping. And, you know, seeing, you know, one of the things I've been talking about a lot lately is this program we're helping very specific high school at risk. There's about 20 high schools in Israel that are for really at-risk kids. And just seeing kids who never thought they'd go to the army, never would have thought of university. And now, in partnership, Leket and the schools, where the schools are creating free after-school clubs to keep the kids in later in the day. Leket provides the food because you can't keep the kids in school if you don't give them a lunch. So it's a partnership. In fact, it's the only time in all our years where we actually went out and said, create programs, right? If we had trouble giving away our food, then maybe we try to create programs.
If you build it, we will feed it.
Right. So we've never really done that because there's tremendous demand for the food we're distributing. But we saw what this program had started in Ofakim, how powerful it was for the kids staying in school, because if they get the lunch, they got to stay in school.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And the food is primarily coming from the army. So it's just a beautiful circle. So it's coming from taxpayer dollars.
Yes.
Something that every Israeli, if you say to them, tell me something about the army, they'll all say, oh, we wasted so much food. So now something that everyone despises in this country has a solution. It's feeding the future, the at-risk future. Right, it's a win-win. It's not ending up in landfills. And now kids who maybe didn't have big dreams, they're dreaming a little bit more than they did. And some of them are succeeding. And people who hear me speak in Washington, you'll see some photos from that, maybe even some videos from that project. So these are, you know, things that spring to mind now. And there's a lot of successes. It's really been a tremendous 15 years.
Sounds like an incredible journey. So, Joseph Gittler, thank you very much for having us.
Thank you for the opportunity of being on the show, and goodbye, Washington.
And as Joseph said, you will have the opportunity to hear the story of Lekit Israel live. On Wednesday, April 25th, the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington invites you for an evening you're not going to want to miss. Not only will you have the opportunity to hear the story of Lekit Israel from Joseph Gittler himself in person, the night is also going to include a fascinating discussion between Joseph and Andrew Fink, who is the COO of DC Central Kitchen, the organization that Joseph mentioned several times, which is a food rescue organization based in the nation's capital. So this fascinating discussion is going to focus on the common challenges that Israelis and Americans face with food insecurity, as well as the unique issues they each face, the Washington issues and the Israeli issues. And we'll also hear about the creative solutions that they've developed. And this whole discussion is going to be moderated by Jonathan Stahl, Vice President of Ballpark Operations and Guest Experience for the Washington Nationals baseball team. The program is going to take place at the Washington School of Law in Tenleytown from 7:30 till 9 p.m. Remember that that's on Wednesday, April 25th. And to learn more about this incredible event or to register, please visit shalomdc.org/changemakers. And thank you for listening. This podcast, part of the Imagine Israel Initiative, is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington and hosted and produced by me, Robbie Greengrass of Macomb. You can find us on shalomdc.org/ImagineIsraelPodcast.